from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny.
Hey, hey, ho, ho, dirty oil has got to go.
Yesterday, 12 protesters were arrested here in San Francisco for demonstrating against the Dakota Access Pipeline. Protests have gone on for months in support of Native Americans demonstrating against the 1,172-mile, $3.8 billion Dakota Access Pipeline along the banks of the Missouri River. That's less than a mile from the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation in North Dakota. With escalating tensions and violence between protesters and police, Amnesty International announced on Friday that it will monitor ongoing clashes between the protesters who call themselves protectors and law enforcement. We'll update you and invite you to talk about it. Join us. Forum is ahead after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum program. Amnesty International USA announced Friday that it will monitor the ongoing clashes between law enforcement and opponents of the $3.8 billion Dakota Access Pipeline, which would cross the Missouri River less than a mile from the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation in North Dakota. Amnesty's move came one day after law enforcement attempted to force the protesters from their encampment, arresting 140 people. And thousands have come together to stop the 1,200-mile project on site, and solidarity protests have erupted in cities across the country, including here in San Francisco, where 12 protesters were arrested on Monday. We're going to have a number of people talking to us about this ongoing clash and ongoing crisis. First, we want to go up to Seattle, though, and welcome Linda Mapes, who is an environmental reporter with the Seattle Times and was there on scene. And welcome to the program. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Actually, the number of arrests has gone up to 412 at last count. I just want to get that straight with you, an update.
Correct. So that 412 is since last April when all this began. And, you know, that's a lot of people. And I'm not really surprised. I mean, there are more and more people coming all the time. As a matter of fact, indigenous people from the forests of South America are going to be arriving in camp today to talk about the effect of so-called mega projects on indigenous people. So this is truly becoming a global movement.
Well, more than 300 tribal nations that oppose the pipeline are there. And when you talk about it being a global movement, it's spread out from the environmental concerns to include things like tribal rights in general and not only clean water and environmental justice, but really the climate and the concern about climate change. But we've got at the heart of this also, with all these other tribes joining, self-determination issues and sovereignty issues.
That's correct.
So right now, the occupation of the sacred stone campaign looks like it's going to continue. And at this point, is it mainly demonstrators clashing with the army or with the police or with both?
Well, let me do a little clarification. There are several camps. The Sacred Stone Camp was the first that was established, and it is primarily a prayer camp, and it was established on the private land of a Sioux tribal elder. There's a much larger camp, the one that you've all seen pictures of probably, with the flags of the tribal nations and so forth. This is the Osete Sikawan camp. That's the native language for the seven fires of the Sioux Nation, which are the seven different clans of the Sioux people. These are the Dakota Lakota people, who are familiar to so many of us. You know, these are the peoples of Custer's Last Stand. These are the people of Sitting Bull. These are the people of the Great Plains, buffalo headdresses. When many of us think of Indians and teepees, these are the people we're thinking about, and it's partly because they're the people who were last engaged with the cavalry trying to hold on to their lands. And, you know, the large camp is the one where most people are gathering, and they are truly coming from all over, and they're also saying they have no intention to leave, and they're attracting a lot of support, both financially, lots of donations to cover bailing people out of jail, donations to pay for food in the camp. There's something about this that has really caught people's sense of justice and their imagination.
Yeah, it certainly seems to be the case. And also, help us sort through, though, the concern about violence that many have, because this started out as a rather pacific protest, and it was supposed to be. In fact, there was talk about cooperation that would inhibit or in some ways deter the violence. And now you've got The National Guard supposedly destroying teepees and sweat lodges and arresting elders. You've got all kinds of talk about the protesters, or as they call themselves, the protectors, throwing bricks and logs and feces at police officers and National Guard. It's hard for the public to kind of straighten out, you know, where the violence is coming from or emanating from for the most part, or who's more to culpable, being culpable.
Right, and I'd like to scale that language down. I was there. I witnessed what happened on Thursday and Friday with my own eyes, and there was definitely a change. No question, things had been peaceful since April, except for the day in which the dogs were used by private security to keep Indian people from trying to stop bulldozing.
And forgive me, we're talking about German Shepherds, which is all too reminiscent of the civil rights protests and going back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that was a terrifying moment. And the North Dakota Sheriff's Department has since found that those private security agents working for the company, the oil company, were not licensed and should not have been there. So that happened back in September, on the 3rd of September. But for that incident, it really had been peaceful. Now, what changed last week while I was there with photographer Alan Berner was some of the tribal members, the chief of one of the tribes, decided to take back land under the Treaty of 1851 that had been purchased by the company. It's in the exact alignment of the pipeline, and they began establishing a camp. This is a week ago Sunday, and put up, within a few days, about 100 teepees, tents, vowing to stay to block construction, any further construction of the pipeline. Not surprisingly, within a few days, the sheriff's office marshaled a police force from six states as far away as Ohio and Indiana to come in and take people out of that camp, march them down the road back to the Osete Sakowin camp south down the highway. And so what you saw unfolding over the course of 2 days was a gradual takedown of the camp and pushback of people down that highway. And, you know, in response, demonstrators did burn two trucks on a bridge. They, there were some rocks thrown. That's true. It did happen on the side of the police. There definitely were very aggressive tactics, however non-lethal tactics. But nonetheless, if you're getting maced, if you're getting your arms pinned behind you with a zip tie, if you're being put to the ground and arrested, if you're having a beanbag shot at you from a gun, if you're getting tased in the neck, and I saw all these things, and I saw the marks on people's skin. I interviewed a tribal council member, shirtless, standing in the middle of the road, covered with mace, trying to catch his breath. He has asthma. You know, this was serious business, and it was scary to watch.
And we should mention the police were pretty militarized, and also, as Amy Goodman pointed out on Democracy Now!, there were reports of security details shooting, or at least using rifles. The stuff has gotten particularly in some ways out of hand. I want to get at the heart of this, if I can, with you, Linda. Linda Mapes with us from Seattle, environmental reporter for the Seattle Times, who has been on this story. What is it? I mean, the pipeline is almost completed. And why is this so fraught for Native people? I mean, I know there's been concern about water contamination, but beyond that, there's also sacred land involved.
That's a very, very important piece of this story, and it gets overlooked. There are a couple key issues of justice here. One is consultation. This pipeline, I mean, the company has to own this. They started construction before they had all their permits in hand, and now they're frantic to finish before the end of the year when the contracts they wrote with oil shippers expire, forcing them to re-rack under new economic conditions in January. They've said in court documents that could effectively cancel the project because it would no longer pencil. But they started this thing before they had all their permits in hand. And not only that, they started this thing before the tribe says over and over again, and federal agencies have agreed, they adequately, meaningfully consulted with the tribe about what was exactly in the ground that their pipeline was going to traverse. And the tribe's own archaeological experts, cultural people who know this land like no one else, who can see this land like no one else, have not been included in those consultations in a meaningful way. And there are very, very sacred and special stone cairns, rock depictions of constellations. One of the most important archaeological finds ever made in North Dakota happened when a private landowner invited that very same archaeological consultant of the tribe, Tim Mentz, to come and have a look at what he could see near the alignment of this pipeline. He filed that information in a court declaration on Friday, and on Saturday, that's when the bulldozers showed up. So, you know, this is the kind of thing that has just blown this thing up and ignited people's sense of injustice. It's the lack of consultation. It's moving the pipeline alignment from north of Bismarck, where it was originally going to be, down to 1/2 mile from the border of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe and 10 miles from their drinking water intake. And it's not only the tribe that has had issues with this. The U.S. Department of Interior, the United States Environmental Protection Agency, the Federal Advisory Council on Historic Preservation have written to the Corps of Engineers last spring and said, you didn't do your due diligence, you haven't adequately assessed public safety, you haven't adequately consulted with the tribe, we need an environmental impact statement, we need to take another look at this project. And so far, that has not happened.
Again, we're talking with Linda Mapes, and she's an environmental reporter of the Seattle Times who has been covering the story in North Dakota. And Linda Mapes, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your being with us here on Forum.
Thank you.
Good to have you. And let me go to Congressman Kevin Cramer, who is joining us now. He's actually in Washington, D.C. He's a Republican U.S. representative for North Dakota. Congressman, good to have you with us on the Forum program this morning. Welcome to it.
Thank you for the opportunity. But just to be clear, I'm in Bismarck today.
Oh, you are in Bismarck. Okay. Thank you for that clarity.
You're right.
There's a lot in many people's minds. There's a lack of clarity over, on the one hand, crude oil coming from North Dakota to Illinois, and the argument, at least from the industry, is a more direct and cost-effective way, an environmentally responsible way. They're arguing that's according essentially to the Dakota Pipeline Project's website. But you can understand fear of oil spill here and the contamination of the water sources. And I wonder what your response is to what Linda Mapes is telling us about lack of consultation. And, you know, changing the pipeline alignment? In other words, some serious questions that people are concerned about and feel are unjust?
Well, first of all, the pipeline was changed, the alignment was changed 91 different times as a result of consultation with 55 tribes and 289 meetings to avoid culturally sensitive areas. The one tribe that chose not to participate in or engage in consultation, and don't take my word for it, take the word of a federal judge in Washington, D.C., in the D.C. Circuit that was appointed by Barack Obama, who writes, quote, this is in an order denying an injunction request by the tribe. Quote, suffice it to say that the tribe largely refused to engage in consultations, and then went on to talk about how the Corps exceeded its National Historic Preservation Act obligations at many of the sites. But I also want to clear up something else that this reporter who continues to say that is factually untrue. This pipeline is in the original preferred route, and it's the reason it's in that route, as opposed to the alternative route north of Bismarck, which she often refers to as the original route. The original route is chosen because it's an existing pipeline corridor. There are already energy infrastructure at that point in the river. There's a pipeline that goes under the river at the very same point. It's this existing corridor that had a full environmental impact statement done 30 years ago. There's a large transmission line that goes over the river at that point. And so all of this was already assessed in a full-blown EIS 30 years ago and further assessed in this process.
But forgive me, what about an up-to-date full environmental review now as opposed to the sort of fast track that they're saying this received?
Well, but it wasn't a fast track. Nobody's ever accused the Corps of Engineers of fast-tracking anything until this pipeline, and it was 2 years ago they started the consultation and the consultation process. In fact, the chairman of Cannonball, the city closest, this is where this intake area is and the community where the camping's taking place, said this week, he told CNN this week, I've had it with all these people. 66 out of 88 of the members of his community or residents of his community voted a couple of weeks ago to not allow a camp in their community. And he's had it with the lawlessness and the violence that is the element that's come in. And by the way, these are not North Dakotans. These are not Standing Rock Sioux tribal members, largely who are creating these problems. These are people with a far different agenda than the water.
Now, you have a lot of people coming in from out of state. I recognize
right.
that, yeah. But I'm also compelled to ask you, Congressman Kevin Cramer, with us from North Dakota, Republican representative for North Dakota. People like Bill McKibben, who that's a kind of radioactive name, I realize, but he's talked about setting up another Flint, Michigan here, because north of Bismarck. You've got some real concern about the water supply, and there are more impoverished populations up there. Actually, I think triple the rate of what we're talking about.
Sure. So an important point here is I think that the Standing Rock tribe, even though they chose not to participate in much of the consultation, and they're getting a lot of criticism from their own members now for not attending the hearings, ignoring them. But even at that, with the proximity of this pipeline, and remember, it's 100 feet below the bed of the river. It's double-lined. It's got shut-off valves on both sides. It's got monitors throughout. But all that aside, its proximity to Standing Rock and to their water supply is a relevant question and concern and worthy of inquiry, even after the fact. And by the way, there are lots of legal ways to challenge this, and they have in court. But it's important also to note that there are multiple pipelines under the Missouri River and several other rivers throughout our country. This is the latest, greatest, most technically safe one that there is. So I think we just have to keep these things in perspective. But they're legitimate.
Yeah, I should mention, in fact, there are 8 pipelines crossing the Missouri River north of the Rock. And yeah. Congressman, I appreciate very much your being with us. Thank you for your time.
It's my pleasure. And I just worry that their legitimate concerns are being diluted by these other outside forces, because I think there is a broader conversation that needs to be taken that we need to have prospectively with regard to consultation. You just can't apply it retroactively after a permit's been issued.
All right, good. Thanks for being with us. That's Congressman Kevin Cramer, Republican U.S. Representative for North Dakota. Let me introduce a couple of other people who are going to be joining us for the rest of the hour. Ron His Horse's Thunder is the former chair of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. He joins us from Fort Yates, North Dakota. Welcome to the program.
Well, good afternoon, it's good morning in your time zone, isn't it?
It is good morning here, but we're glad to have you morning or afternoon. We're also going to welcome Craig Stevens. Glad to have him. He's spokesperson for the Midwest Alliance for Infrastructure Now. They are a coalition supporting the Dakota Access. And Craig Stevens is in Washington, D.C. Welcome to the program. Craig Stevens, are you there? Well, we'll certainly make every effort to connect with him. That is the plan here. Let me, in the meantime, talk with Ron His Horse's Thunder, who, as I said, is here with us from Fort Yates, North Dakota. You know, one of the arguments you hear here is from those who perhaps, I suppose, would be on the congressman's side of this is we're getting more and more dependent on foreign nations for oil. This is going to ship about 400,000 barrels a day. And the argument is it's safe and there are more union jobs. And what do you say to people who essentially present that argument to you?
Well, first and foremost is this. When Dakota Access Pipeline was talking to people about we're going to build this pipeline, their premise was this, was that they weren't going to ship this oil offshore, that this was going to make this country energy independent and was going to allow us to have cheap fuel. Now, since Congress has changed the law, now Dakota Access changed its tune and saying it's going to allow us to ship oil off the continent. So they've changed their tune on this thing here, and they're going with the waves of the time, if you will. And the whole idea is either way they're going to make lots of money, and that's truly what they're into it about, not cheap fuel, not energy independence. They're about making money.
Well, speaking of money, it's $4 million has been essentially allocated for additional funding about costs associated with the protests, or what you call them, the protectors. Is there a sense, I mean, there really is a division, isn't there, within the tribe about tactics to be used here between, at least what I'm reading, a younger demographic of tribe members and those who are somewhat older?
Well, I want to counterpoint that Congressman Cramer made. He was talking about the chairman of Cannonball District, we call it, and that's his personal opinion. Now, Cramer said that the district itself voted 2 weeks ago not to allow the camp, and that is absolutely false. 2 weeks ago they met, and they said, there were some people opposed it, yes, and there were some people who said they didn't mind. The prevailing vote was, we don't mind, allow the tribe, if it wants to set up an alternative camp on in the Cannonball District. So Kramer is absolutely wrong in that.
Let me get to, I think we have Craig Stevens on now. Craig Stevens, are you there?
Yes, I am. Sorry about that.
That's
Thanks
okay.
for having me back.
Glad to have you. Craig Stevens is in D.C. He's a spokesman for the Midwest Alliance for Infrastructure Now. They're a coalition supporting, excuse me, Dakota Access. You know, you've got, I was just talking about tactics with Ron as Horses Thunder, and there's talk about more civil disobedience at banks and Army Corps of Engineers, which is still granting permits. You got essentially a couple dozen banks that have lent money to pipeline to the pipeline project. Are you in accord with the congressman here that a lot of this is coming from, I suppose, what they used to call outside agitators?
Oh, absolutely, and I think that's what the sheriff is saying on the ground too. That, you know, you mentioned with your first guest that there were, have been over 400 arrests. At last I saw, almost 90% of those were from outside of North Dakota. I think a lot of the North Dakotans actually support a peaceful, prayerful protest, but there are a lot of agitators from outside the state that are actually committing crimes, and they're trespassing, they're slaying cattle, and actually just yesterday there was a report of an arrest for a woman who attempted murder, who shot at police officers. So it is a tense situation even there now.
Well, you've also got the argument that they're going to have between 8,000 and 12,000 local jobs on the pipe. That's what the pipeline developer said would be created during construction. How many of these jobs are going to native local people?
You know, that's a great question, and the labor unions certainly employ a number of folks who are Native Americans and certainly native to the community. And like you said, that's 8,000 to 10,000 people who are reliant on these jobs that are actually good paying and have good benefits for their family.
But they're mostly union jobs, aren't they?
They're all union jobs, absolutely.
Yeah. So you're going to be able to draw from the tribes, from particularly the Sioux people who are there?
I'm sure those who are part of that, you know, construction outfit are absolutely qualified to participate.
Let me go back to Ron as Horses Thunder. What about the argument, Ron, that so many of these people who are involved in protests or protection are coming from outside North Dakota?
Mike, let me tell you this, that I'm one of those people who was arrested. And so to say it's all outside agitators, no, it's not. There are plenty of tribal members on the ground, on the front lines, as we call it. But you know what? There's this idea of slaying cattle. When have they got evidence at all that it was who did this? No, not at all. The other thing, when they start talking about slaying cattle and illegal activities, you need to ask the question of the state of North Dakota. What about the Dakota Access Pipeline worker who had an AR-15 driving through water protectors, getting out of his vehicle with his AR-15 and aiming at people? You talk about illegal activity. What happened to him? He was out of jail before I was.
Yeah, I just mentioned that instance earlier when I was talking about the reporting from Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! But we're coming up on a break, and I want to bring our listeners into this, and I want you to be involved, those of you who are listening, with questions or comments or simply whatever you want to bring to this conversation. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786, and we welcome your call. So please feel free to join the program. You're invited to do that now by phone, 866-733-6786, or by email. The email address is forum@kqed.org. You can also join us by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and simply click on the segment, or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Talking now with Ron as Horses Thunder, who's former chair of the Standing Sioux Rock Sioux Tribe, and Craig Stevens, spokesman for Midwest Alliance for Infrastructure Now. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. It was announced on Friday that Amnesty International will monitor the Dakota Pipeline protests, and the protests have been going on, and they have unfortunately resulted in some violence, and there remains a great deal of tension there. We spoke earlier with Linda Mapes, an environmental reporter for the Seattle Times, who is covering this story, and Congressman Kevin Kramer, Republican for North Dakota. We have Ron and his Horses Thunder with us on the line from Fort Yates, North Dakota, former chair of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, and Craig Stevens, who is spokesperson for the Mideast Alliance for Infrastructure Now, which is a coalition supporting Dakota Access. And let me go back for a moment to you, Ron, as Horses Thunder. You were arrested. Your wife was arrested. What were the charges?
At first, it was just simple trespass. By the time They tried to bond me out of jail the next day. They had increased the charges to, conspiracy to commit arson, rioting, and what was the other one? There's a third misdemeanor in there, civil disobedience.
There was a lot of talk, and let me go to Craig Stevens on this, about people being arrested and overcharged, a lot of arrests for trespassing, but also a good deal of reporting about tactics that were, well, overzealous, let us say, or over the top even. What do you say to that, Craig Stevens?
I guess if you're speaking specifically to last week, all those protesters were, first of all, they were trespassing illegally. They did start fires. There is now an unusable bridge along the pathway. And, you forgot to mention that the day before, the sheriff had come out and talked to the protesters and warned them that something's going to happen. They gave them an opportunity to go back to the camp peacefully, back to the lanches where they were allowed to actually protest.
Well, and the Morton County Sheriff actually put out word that there was cooperation between protesters and police. At least that was the report I'd read.
Today,
They've come to at least some kind of agreement, or at least one would hope they've come to some kind of agreement. But let me cut to the chase here with you, if I could, Craig Stevens, a lot of people are concerned about the oil industry and their plans of Shell to drill up in the Arctic and so forth. This gets down to, in many people's minds, concern particularly over global warming and over climate change. And you say what to that concern?
Well, first of all, our nation uses about 19 million barrels of crude oil a day, and we're going to use that, and that's not going to change anytime soon. We're going to use that whether it's something that's developed here in the United States or something that's developed from another country and then shipped here. So the more we can do to develop our own natural resources, that's better for the United States. It fuels our economy. It actually makes sure that the product is available. It actually makes sure it's affordable. And if you look at pipelines, there are 208,000 miles of pipelines that cross the United States transporting energy product every day. So that's enough to go around the world 10 times. And it is the safest, most carbon-sensitive method to transport petroleum. And
unless there's a leak, of course.
And leaks are rare, and they're much safer than both truck transportation and rail. And if we're looking at rail, and we'll look at just the Dakota Access Pipeline, now that would ship, as you mentioned, about 450,000 barrels of crude a day, and it would supplant the need for a rail line that is 700 cars that goes by the 1.5 miles within the water intake of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe. So right now we're talking about water intake. Where the Dakota Access Pipeline would cross the Missouri River is 70 miles north of where that water intake is. And that rail line right now crosses every day with 300,000 barrels of oil within 1.5 miles of the water intake.
Right.
So it is safer. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just coming in because I thought you'd finish your sentence. But if you have something else to add, please do.
No, it's just safer and more efficient way to transport petroleum.
Yeah, I want to bring our callers in. And let me go first to Lynn. Lynn, thanks for waiting. Join us. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I am calling because of two main reasons. One of them is Native American abuses during colonization in places like Canada and Australia have been acknowledged. And I think this is continuing America's refusal to acknowledge what happened to the indigenous people, and it's continuing the abuse. And I also think that climate change is a global issue, and of course people from all over the country and all over the world are going to go to Standing Rock to protest this. We have alternatives. We do not need to stay addicted to oil, and we can leave it in the ground. And I'm curious about what you're...
Well, I thank you for that statement, but as far as just leaving it in the ground, you want to respond to that, Craig Stevens?
Yeah, I mean, that simply isn't true. And right now, if you look at the transportation alone, the transportation sector alone here in the United States, it would take 17 years to completely transform the vehicle fleet in the United States. Right now, the technology does not exist at a cost-effective way to even have that technology on the road. We talk about Teslas, we talk about some of the battery power, we talk about hydrogen. So there are other ways in development, but nothing is realistic and nothing is in the short term. So in the short term, and even in the moderate term, fossil fuels are going to be the way we power our economy, especially our transportation fleet.
And let me go back to Rhinoceros Thunder. I mean, what Lynn pointed out about the ongoing concern that many people have, justifiably so, about the treatment of indigenous people and really the oppression of indigenous people. You see what's going on in North Dakota as, again, the continuity of that in terms of history?
Absolutely, especially when you consider the idea that, one of the proposed routes for this pipeline was close to or 10 miles north of Bismarck, and they decided not to do it. Why? Court documents say because if it leaks, it will endanger the water for the state capital of North Dakota. If they're so sure, if Kevin Cramer says this is his words, the latest and greatest pipeline, if that's true, then let it go through Bismarck, North Dakota.
All right. I want to go to Eric Ferrero. I mentioned earlier that Amnesty International is now monitoring, and Eric Ferrero is Director of Communications for Amnesty International USA. And thank you for joining the program, Eric Ferrero.
Glad to be here, Michael. Thank you.
And we should mention that you are in Los Angeles. And I guess Amnesty International sent a letter to, to the Morton County in terms of spelling out the problems. What are you doing to monitor? What's your presence going to be?
Sure. We've had a team of human rights observers on the ground at the pipeline protest site for the last several days. They were also there several weeks ago. For about a week, we sent them at the invitation of local leaders, community leaders, and there they are working to document and observe to ensure that people's right to protest is protected. We're really concerned about what we're seeing and what we're hearing, and so we sent observers to be on the ground. As you say, we've reached out to both the local law enforcement officials. We also yesterday formally asked the Department of Justice to do a full investigation about people's rights being violated out there at the protest site.
Well, we've heard about arrests for just protesting, or for that matter, we've heard reports about bail being too high, about facilities being inappropriate that people are put in, all these kinds of things. I mean, you're there to monitor the whole, if you will, the whole gestalt. Huh?
Yeah, that's right. And it's both the things that you're talking about once people are arrested, but it's also the atmosphere that law enforcement creates well before that. For example, what Amnesty's human rights observers have seen at the protest site are law enforcement officials who are really dressed and armed for war when they approach these protesters in ways that are frankly inappropriate. And what they do is, instead of de-escalating tensions, which is how police are supposed to handle these situations, they're actually escalating tensions. And we're very, very concerned about that. And that's one of the several things that we've raised with local law enforcement and the Justice Department, is that you have both state and local law enforcement authorities and private security firms that are out there armed and dressed for a battlefield.
Well, it's been described as a war zone up there. I mean, the police are pretty heavily militarized as far as weaponry, but there's also even a no-fly zone that's been violated with helicopters going overhead. And Eric Ferrero, I wish you good luck. You're going to need it up there from the sounds of it. And thank you for joining us. Eric Ferrero, again, is Director of Communications for Amnesty International USA and joined us from Los Angeles. Let me go to more of our callers. And Bill, we go to you next. Bill, you're on.
Yes. This speaks to what Eric was just saying, and that is, who is paying for the militarization of the police up there? Who is paying? Is it coming out of the municipality? And what interest is it in theirs to be paying for these things? It's going to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, I presume, maybe more in overtime fees. Who's going to benefit?
They've asked for, I mentioned earlier, Bill, there's been a request for $4 million to continue covering safety costs, as they describe them, associated with the demonstrations. The state's emergency commission, which is made up of the governor, the secretary of state, and four of the legislators, is expected to sign off on this today. And the funds would add to $6 million line of credit, which was approved in September. Most of that's been used, according to the Secretary of State. You want to comment here, though, Craig Stevens, on, I mean, are we talking about, I think Ron is asking, or Bill is asking about corporate funding.
Yeah, and I don't know how that's going to work out, but I do want to comment on the notion of the militarization. Now, first of all, you know, protesters have thrown Molotov cocktails at police. They've thrown rocks. They've threatened them. And we heard on Thursday that a woman shot a gun at police. So, you know, thank God no one's been killed. But, you know, the fact that these police officers are showing up with protective gear on and using non-lethal means to try to subordinate or try to, you know, control and bring peace to trespassers and individuals who have committed crimes. I mean, this is about keeping the peace in the area. These folks, you know, have trespassed. We're blocking a road. We're blocking the lawful construction of the pipeline. So, you know, they were just doing their jobs and doing it in a way that actually protected themselves.
And you say what, Ron, a source of thunder?
Well, rocks were thrown, absolutely. After they were macing people, after they were point blank shooting rubber bullets at people. And by the way, that is not non-lethal tactics. When you shoot someone point blank range 10 feet away with a rubber bullet, that's not non-lethal. Now, so rocks were thrown after that happened. As far as Molotov cocktails, show us the film footage of Molotov cocktails. Show us it. The police have video cameras going all the time. Show us it. It's again a way of inciting the general public against the protesters. Show us it.
Again, Ron is Horses Thunder, is former chair of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, and we're going to bring more of your callers on here. Let me go next to David in Sonoma. David, you're on.
Yes. I'm really behind this indigenous movement going on up here. These folks were our original physicists. They understand absolutely everything about how Mother Nature works on this planet, and they also understand how the universe works as well. And I'd like to point out one little equation. It kind of gets left out here. It's called crude oil plus water equals endocrine neuron disruptors, which equals abnormal growth to children's organs. And that's what we have in play here. And we talk about drilling up in the Arctic underneath that ice. I've never heard anything so stupid in my life. That what's going to happen up underneath that ice? What do you think is going to happen if we have a blowout like we did down in the good old Gulf of Mexico down there? That oil come up underneath that ice, kill all the krill, kill all the phytoplankton, kill all the plankton, and then there goes our ocean. Man, let's get real. This stuff is very serious.
All right, David, I appreciate your comment. We'll let it stand as an editorial comment, but I want to read another comment from a listener named Fernando who says, the eminent domain clause gives the government the right to trample on private property, but there must be expected benefits of the pipeline to all Americans. Can those benefits be discussed too? Cheaper oil prices, ecologically safer transportation of crude from Canada to refineries? I mean, let's see if we can get those outlined from you, if you could, Craig Stevens. But also, you might want to address the concerns that this last caller brought up. And there are a lot of concerns that are being expressed, I might add, by you had said that leaks are rare. A lot of people disagree with you on that. But please go ahead.
Sure. So, first of all, pipelines are the safest, most economical way to transport crude oil. And like your, I guess, the someone who wrote in mentioned, it does mean that we would be more energy independent. We'd be less reliant on fuels from other parts of the country, especially those that, you know, aren't our allies. Additionally, it means a steady supply, and also means U.S. jobs. Right now, up at the Bakken Formation, thousands of people are being employed by as they're working to extract that energy. Additionally, it helps to power the nation's economy and the manufacturing sector. You look at petroleum, you know, thousands of household products from, you know, carpet fibers to plastics to chemicals. Petroleum is a feedstock for those materials, so it really drives our nation's economy.
Let me go back to you, Ron, his horse's thunder. I'm looking back to questions of law enforcement here because I'm looking at a comment from a listener who says, doesn't a property owner have a right to forcibly remove trespassers? Doesn't law enforcement have the obligation to elevate force required to effect an arrest? If not, then we have no laws.
A property owner doesn't have the right to use lethal force to protect his property unless it's in his home. In his home. These guards they got out there, we call them goons, are armed with AR-15s and sniper rifles. Now, asking the police to come in and help them remove trespassers, that's true, they can do that. But the type of tactics that the sheriff is using is escalating this to the point where, yes, now it looks like a war zone. Why? Because they're dressed in full battle gear, because they have weapons. They're the ones that have all the weapons.
I want to read some more listener comments. There is a tweet from a listener who writes, "The violence first and foremost came from the state, not from the protectors. We must highlight that fact." Another listener writes, "The images of militarized law enforcement confronting peaceful protesters standing up to the oil industry to protect natural resources, water, and the earth are a metaphor for our troubled planet, for our troubled time." And Edith writes, "Corporations get military intervention from governments while people don't get the same protection. The military agitators have been brought in to tarnish the peaceful protesters by violent actions. They are committing illegal actions under police cover. We have seen this dirty trick activity over and over again against the Black Panthers and anti-war protesters, etc." Let me get some more callers on here. Let me go up to Santa Rosa. Ruhana, good morning.
Hi, Ruhana. Thank you. I just wanted to share, I'm part of Sonoma County Solidarity with Standing Rock, and this is a Sonoma County organization that is supporting education about what's happening in Standing Rock and encouraging people to go there. And a lot of people from here that have been going, from indigenous tribes here, local tribes in Sonoma County, and non-native people have been going mainly to bring supplies. One person has gone to help set up wintering structures that people can live in while they're being protecting the water, and people have been bringing medical supplies and firewood, and I want to say what they've been witnessing is a very difficult situation where people have been the primary protest has been prayer and occupying land that's actually within the treaty of 1851, Fort Laramie Treaty, that gives that land where people are demonstrating to the Lakota Sioux, to the Sioux tribes. And so the constant use of the word trespassing has been inappropriate, because just because a treaty's been violated doesn't legitimize that. And using terminology of trespassing, when people are invited by the Standing Rock Sioux to stand with them nonviolently for the sake of the water, protection of the water and of the land, these people should not be called trespassers or outside agitators.
Well, they call themselves protectors. But I'm wondering about a tweet here from a listener, and let me extend my thanks to you, Rahana, for that call. I want to go back to Rana's Horse's Thunder and get a response to a listener, Austin, who says, "I'm interested in going to North Dakota to experience this global unity of indigenous people. How can I be helpful and not a burden sending supplies?" Ron?
I'd say one, if you could send supplies, that'd be great. But two, we need more people up here. Right now, the sheriff has called in other sheriffs from five different states. They've got over 400, and we're seeing more police show up all the time. They've probably got now over 500 police officers. And when we're up on the front lines, there are maybe 200, 300 of us. So they've simply got us overwhelmed in numbers. What we would love to do, be able to do, is join arm in arm and literally stand in front of the police officers and say, "We are here in prayer." As they start to arrest us, we need to have another line of people right behind them and another line of people behind them, to the point where they don't have enough officers to arrest us all.
Now, Ron, I also have to ask you, because I've got a tweet about this, and there are many people who have brought this up, that, I'll read the tweet. "How do the protesters interpret the lack of support from President Obama and presidential candidate Hillary Clinton?"
I don't know about Hillary Clinton. I can tell you this, that when people say the lack of support by President Obama, he's actually shown his support by instructing his agencies to take a second look at the environmental impact that this water crossing will cause. And they have held up the permit. And by the way, Kevin Cramer said that the permit was issued. He's wrong. He lied. The permit was not issued.
Well, there's another listener who comments about Congressman Cramer, saying Congressman Cramer tells us that one tribe refused to take part in consultations over sacred sites, and many sites are being respected. Which tribe? Which sites? Let me go to more of your calls, and let's bring on a caller. Dale, good morning. Dale, you're on.
Good morning. Yeah, I definitely am a supporter of the indigenous rights, but I would say that probably the underlying thing that ties everybody together on a bigger level of this is the petroleum issue. But when I hear the lobbyist that's on the air today talking about it as an industry and how established as it is and it's part of our economy and all this, we know that that has been true, but everyone knows that is changing. It's a finite resource. We know the damage it's been causing, and the energy needs to go into finding these alternative ways to make the planet work. Not, it's like fighting for coal in West Virginia. We know that industry is going away.
And you say what to that, Craig Stevens?
Well, first of all, I'm not a lobbyist, but you know our need for fossil fuels, and especially in the transportation sector, is unquestioned. And I do want to take a step back too to talk about this line itself. And you know, there was some question as to whether the Army Corps issued that permit, that easement for under Lake Oahe. And while it has not issued its final easement, it did recommend the approval of that easement for drafting and for the completion. And right now we're talking about a 1,000-foot easement on a 1,200-mile project that's already been approved by the federal government and the four states. They've looked at the environmental and the cultural impacts of this, and they, in all jurisdictions, have approved this. So it's just, it is coming down, as Ron mentioned, it comes down to about 1,000 feet, but it does parallel an existing natural gas pipeline. It's already been drilled, and it's been shown to be safe.
Well, I've got a tweet here that says, have we not had record low oil prices for the last 2 years because of a substantial surplus of global and domestic oil? Craig Stevens?
Well, that's a great question, and I think the first part of that is that oil is sold on a global market. I think that's important for people to know. One of the reasons why oil has been relatively cheap is because we've had a depressed economy. Now, as the economy comes back, the demand for oil, both in the United States and around the world, is going to increase, and with that, so will the price. And that's why we need to make sure that we have an energy infrastructure here in the United States that actually can deliver petroleum product to the places where it's needed.
Well, I don't know if you can answer this question, Craig Stevens, but I've got a listener named Aaron who says, can you quantify the economic and ecological savings the pipeline would provide? How much is the usage of the current train system versus the pipeline in barrels of crude and dollars and in carbon emissions?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know the answer to that, but you know, if you look at just the rail cars alone, I mean, it's 700 cars per day that transports this 300,000 barrels, the equivalent that this pipeline would be supplanting. So if you can imagine 700 rail cars rolling through, you know, these four states, I mean, that's a tremendous amount of carbon that is being saved.
And another listener wants to know, how much do these companies and the government actually care that some NGO is monitoring them? Can anything be done to stop them from mistreating the protesters? Can I go to you on that, Ron, as Horses Thunder?
I don't think that they're paying attention, put it that way. The government officials, the county, they're paying attention to it. But has it stopped them from using military tactics? No.
Let me bring in another caller, and we go next to Magic. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. You know, you can just Google quickly and find out that there's hundreds of accidents every day. And as Dan Jones has said, oil is death, water is life. This is a spiritual moment of awakening. These aren't outside agitators. The whole world is feeling like Turtle Island is rising. And we are not going to let military come in and continue the genocide against these people. We all have a job to do. We all need to work together. Police, I know a friend there. Police are crying because they're being put there to do wrong things to these Native people. They didn't have permits. The corporations do this all the time. They don't have the permit, and they go ahead, and then they get allowed to do that. This can be stopped right now.
All right, let me thank you for that call. And in fact, I'm looking at a Facebook comment from Lynn who says, other countries such as Canada and Australia have acknowledged the genocide of original inhabitants of the countries that they took over by force. It's time for the USA to join them and stop taking Sioux land. And here in the Bay Area, there's been a good deal of support for this. Some protesters from the University of California, Berkeley, have been arrested. Sam Liccardo, the mayor of San Jose, has spoken openly about supporting what's going on there. And it has had a global reach. I wonder if before we close out on this hour, I could get each of you, that is Craig Stevens and Ron as Horses Thunder, to say something about, what you'd like to, what you envision and hope the resolution to this would be. First from you, Craig Stevens.
Sure. I think that ultimately, if we follow the rule of law and the facts and science and engineering, that ultimately this final easement will be issued and the pipeline will become operational in the near future. And I hope that it's done peacefully. And I think that's actually where the federal government can step in. And I think by delaying this process, even though the approvals have been given, I think that's actually, you know, added to the storm here.
Yeah, but can you move the pipe?
Well, right now, that's the easements lay right into where the pipeline is.
Yeah.
So, all that work has been done, right? It's on private property. All the easements have been issued. So that's the pipeline route.
All right, let me go to you, Ron, as Horses Thunder.
Well, we believe the pipeline can be moved. We understand that there's an energy dependence on oil. We understand that. And we understand it's going to take years, 17 years or thereabouts, before we wean ourselves from this independence. And so we understand that we drive cars. But can the pipeline be moved? Absolutely, it can be moved. It can be moved. And in fact, to the union people, if we move it, you guys are going to have more jobs.
And I'm looking at a tweet here from Kara that says, what reasonable person thinks it makes sense to run an oil pipeline under a major water source? If so safe, send it through Bismarck. I think that's what you were saying before, Rhinoceros Thunder.
That's exactly what I said. If Kevin Kramer thinks this is the latest and greatest pipeline, let it go through Bismarck, North Dakota.
Okay, we'll leave it there, and I'll extend thanks to both of you. Rhinoceros Thunder is former chairman of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. He joined us from Fort Yates, North Dakota. Thank you, Ron. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
And thanks to Craig Stevens, spokesman for the Midwest Alliance for Infrastructure Now, a coalition supporting the Dakota Access. Thank you for joining us, Craig Stevens.
Thanks, Michael.
And Craig Stevens joined us from Washington, D.C. And you can join us here every Monday through Friday. We're with you live from 9 to 11 with an hour repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. Remind you that we do like to hear from you. If you have thoughts about what you hear on Forum or would like to hear on Forum, email us, forum@kqed.org. And you can also, of course, continue this discussion online by going to our website, kqed.org/forum. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. We also have helped this fill-in engagement producer and working behind the scenes here, Jeremy Siegel, former intern. Also want to extend thanks, of course, to our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our general manager, Joanne Wallace, and remind you again that we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. Thank you for joining us for this opening hour of Forum. Next, we're going to talk about Latino voters. Stay tuned for that. And for all of us at KQED Public Radio, we thank you for joining us. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.